The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Good morning, and away we go again for another Thursday, the 2nd of March 2023. It's 5 minutes past nine. How are you keeping? You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show. We have, as always, a packed show for you, and we want your views and your say. And if you want to raise an issue, you know yourself, 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, WhatsApps and text to that number, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. Emails to comments at highlandradio.com, comments at highlandradio.com, or you can hop on to your smart TV, your Fire Stick, your tablet or mobile phone, laptop, watch the show live on Facebook or on YouTube, or on our website at highlandradio.com. I have a whole pile of papers in front of me today because it is a Thursday, busiest day of the week in our part of the world for newspapers. So let's see what's making the headlines on the front of and inside some of them. We'll start with the Tyrconnell Tribune. The Office of the Planning Regulator has proposed major changes to the Letterkenny draft plan submitted by the Council's planning unit in Lifford. During the 6 weeks public consultation period, 38 submissions were made across a range of interests. This process closed 2 weeks ago. The OPR has significant powers, and only the Minister for Housing can overturn decisions of the office. Details of the OPR recommendations and observations have significant implications in the area of land rezoning, housing construction, future road strategy, economic development, flood mitigation, climate action obligation, and much more. Extensive coverage, as you can imagine, on the front of and inside on page two of the Tyrconnell Tribune. A lot of work went into that story for you today. On to the Donegal News now, and four of Donegal's TDs have vowed to send back a pay increase which came into effect yesterday. Wage packets of Oireachtas members and public servants have risen by 2% in a deal brokered amid soaring living costs. For TDs, that adds up to an increase of €2,000. It takes the basic pay before expenses of a deputy to an all-time high of €107,376. Your TDs are earning a basic salary of €107,000. That's up from the previous Celtic Tiger era peak of 106. So it's the most they've ever been paid. Both Donegal Sinn Féin TDs, Piers Doherty and Padraig McLaughlin, have confirmed that they will not be accepting the extra money due to the financial pressures being felt by the general public. Independent TD Thomas Pringle said he had rejected previous pay rises and would do so again. A spokesperson for Minister for Agriculture, Food and the Marine, Charlie McConlogue, said ministers annually hand back a percentage of their wages to the state, and that practice will continue. And I think that's it, is it? I don't see a quote here from Joe McHugh. I'll get to that, though. Maybe they couldn't get to speak to him, but I did read through the article, but now as I glance over, I can't see it. That was the Donegal News. On to the Donegal Democrat now. And as we were hearing on the programme yesterday, buildings at St. Connell's Hospital in Letterkenny, which have not been used and have been lying empty for years, may be brought back into use under new plans. Over the last decade, the Health Service Executive, Capital and Estates have carried out a number of projects on St. Connell's campus. The works include internal refurbishments, the roof coverings being replaced, re-rendering, and external facades and window repairs continuing. But as we heard yesterday, all the public wants is the space to be used effectively and to make experience at Letterkenny University Hospital less crowded and more pleasant. You know, no talk, just do it. I think at this stage, is that where we're at? The Derry News now this morning. Railway passengers terrified by signal failure. A rail passenger said he was left terrified by the events surrounding an apparent signal failure in Belfast's Great Victoria Street train station. Speaking to Derry News, the man said he had taken the 5:38 p.m. Derry to Belfast train on Saturday. He added the train was delayed when we reached the end of the line because it had been directed into a platform from which there was another train waiting to pull out. It was pitch black outside, and all I could think of was, what if we hit that train? I was terrified. They had to reverse our train out, switch tracks and come back in. We eventually pulled into platform four. an awful tragedy, a rail tragedy in Greece, which is covered in some of the papers. We'll get to that a little later on. An incredible loss of life. 38 people died. It must have just been a horrendous thing to be involved in. But as I say, we'll reference that in papers later on. The Irish Independent today. State-owned energy companies like ESB face the prospect of a new levy on above-normal profits to help households offset their soaring energy bills. Ministers are so far reluctant to haul in energy companies over their failure to pass on wholesale price cost savings to customers by reducing their bills. But new measures, in addition to the planned windfall tax on private energy firms to recoup some of the profits in the sector, are now being actively examined. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar has raised the prospect of a special dividend being taken from state-owned energy companies such as ESB, which is kind of interesting because he sat across from me here. A number of months ago, and I said to him at the time when electricity prices were going up, you know, what about a windfall tax on profits to ease the cost of electricity for the companies? And he said at that time, well, in terms of presuming he meant the wholesale suppliers that they're outside of Ireland, you know, the Shells and what have you, and you know, they couldn't really do much about it, but everything was on the table. And here we are months and months and months and months later, and we are still being screwed by the electricity companies, and we're still just talking about what can be done. I asked a few people yesterday as to a few simple questions that I asked on the show yesterday morning. You know, at what stage do companies buy on the wholesale markets? For how long? At what price? You know, I think we should have that information. Are they now buying at lower prices? Do they wait till the higher price stuff runs out? Could they not do some sort of a medium between the two? It's all a big mystery as to, you know, and who oversees what the prices are in the wholesale markets. You know, where's the oversight there? Can they just pick a price? Can they name a price? And then we have this ridiculous situation whereby effectively the price of electricity is struck at the most expensive rate, regardless of it being wind energy, solar energy. They all get paid, do they not, the one highest rate, which will be dictated primarily by gas, will it not? Crazy old system. And it's us the... There's other stories today. 375,000 people couldn't pay their energy bills last year. 375,000 people couldn't heat their homes. And we've got energy companies, and I'm not going to keep on about it, but it's a disgrace. We've got energy companies making record profits off, literally off our backs. All right, the Irish Times this morning, almost 1,900 AIB borrowers secured private debt write-offs of more than 90% since the financial crash, the bank has disclosed in the wake of the controversy over former hurler DJ Carey's deal. The majority state-owned bank will tell the Oireachtas Finance Committee today that these deals were agreed outside the formal bankruptcy and insolvency process, where borrowers have fully disclosed their financial affairs and agreed to maintain a reasonable lifestyle. Jim O'Keefe, AIB's Managing Director of Retail Banking, will say in an opening statement to the committee that a further 4,300 borrowers had their debts reduced in approved personal insolvency arrangements, a post-crash mechanism that allows people escape unaffordable loans. Now, the devil will be in the detail, of course. We saw someone who owned many, many millions of euro ending up having to pay 60,000 euro back, a write-down monumental proportions. There are others that have availed of write-downs, but what's the mechanism? Who qualified? You know, why are some of us out there, for example, you know, with worthless assets? I'm thinking of people with defective concrete homes, not getting any write-down, not getting any arrangements with the bank. Is it who you know, what you know, who's doing this? If it's outside the bankruptcy and insolvency process, who's getting it done? How are they getting it done? Again, hopefully, a lot of those answers will be questions asked today and answers forthcoming. I don't want to burden you with too much bad news, but knowledge is power, and I suppose that some of you might need to know, and it's in the Irish Daily Mail today, that mortgage interest rates for some homeowners could hit a crippling 8% later this year, adding thousands to people's bills. Many vulture funds are already charging more than 6.5% on some of the 130,000 mortgages they hold. Now, that's three times what a lot of people are paying out there. However, that rate is before the next planned increase in March, financial expert Park Kissane told the Dáil's Committee on Finance yesterday. And some homeowners face even further increases, according to Sinn Féin Finance Post and spokesperson Piers Doherty. People have contacted me, he said, and they're already on 7.5%, and it's going to go to 8. A jump to 8 from the current average variable rate of 3.85% on a €300,000 mortgage would send repayments up €713 a month, from 1,547 to 2,260. I mean, that's just no one can, very few people can absorb that. Even TDs with their increased income might struggle. The Irish Farmers Journal, over 46,000 farmers have been accepted into the Agri-Climate Rural Environmental Scheme. Bit of a mouthful, that's acres. This after Minister for Agriculture Charlie McConnellogue announced that space has been found for all valid applications. Farmers are now expected to draw down a combined €266.6 million in payments this year and €1.33 billion over the scheme's five-year duration. Farmers who applied as individuals can claim up to €7,300 for each year of the scheme, with payments expected to average around €5,000 per year. That's the acres scheme. A lot of news this morning, of course, about the fire at a Wexford hospital, thankfully. We'll be talking about this a little later on in the programme, of course. It's a really significant story, but thankfully no injuries. But more than 200 patients had to be evacuated last night after a blaze ripped through part of Wexford General Hospital. Although nobody was injured in the drama, hospital bosses declared a major emergency when the fire erupted just before 4 p.m. Many of the patients were moved to other hospitals in the southeast, Cork and Dublin, as dozens of fire personnel battled the inferno. It's a small fire, but it's not insignificant because it could have damaged the infrastructure in terms of one part of the hospital feeding another. Therefore, people are going to have to be moved to other hospitals, maternity or paediatrics to Dublin and so on and so forth. Already hospitals in that area, as they all are, under severe pressure. On to the Irish Daily Mirror now. And dozens of people from Northern Ireland working in Donegal exploited a benefits loophole to print off their own COVID certs and defraud more than €65,000 in illegal payments. The 34 employees made dozens of bogus enhanced illness benefit claims while still turning up for work and claiming their full salaries. A number of staff, all resident in Derry, appeared before Buncrana District Court, where they admitted fraud. All of the employees living in the north were able to claim the bogus COVID payments after realising they did not have to have any proof of medical intervention for their claims. Instead, all they had to do was to log onto a National Health Service website in the UK and print off a self-isolation cert. This allowed the employees to receive further payments under the Enhanced Illness Benefits Scheme of €350 per week, while they were already being paid their normal wages by their unsuspecting employer. The fraud only came to light when eagle-eyed staff in the control section of the illness benefit scheme spotted an unusual increase in such claims from individual employees of the company, sparking the probe by inspectors in the Inishowen Special Investigations Unit. According to the Department of Social Protection, investigators, the company for which the employees worked, knew nothing of the scam and cooperated fully with the investigation. Judge Etain Cunningham accepted the pleas in a number of cases and issued fines to the offenders after hearing plans to pay back the money to the Department of Social Protection. Those plans to pay that back were now in place. And last but certainly not least, that Greek train crash. Survivors of a head-on train crash that killed 38 people have told of 10 nightmarish seconds when their carriage overturned and was engulfed in flames. They were trapped as a passenger train hit a freight train travelling in the opposite direction at high speed outside the Greek city of Larissa. Now you can imagine the impact and the noise and the disruption. It would have been horrific. Most of those killed, including two drivers on each of the trains, died instantly, with the first two carriages of the passenger train destroyed on impact. Flames swept through the derailed third and fourth carriages, forcing passengers to batter through windows to escape. And as I say, I don't need to paint the picture of the horror that must have unfolded during that those moments and since as well, of course. Okay, 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and text to that number if you've anything to say. 07491 25,000 if you wish to give us a call, and hop on our social media via any of your devices, Fire Sticks, smart TVs, tablets, laptops, or whatever, if you wish to show and see, if you wish to watch. And you'll see many of the guests on the show as they join us. Now, motorists in part of Inishowen are going to face a significant detour this month for what I imagine are essential works if they're going ahead in and around the Moff area. To find out more about this, we're joined on the programme by Councillor Terry Crossan. Terry, thanks for taking the call today.
Hi, Greg, and thank you for having me.
Now, what's going on here? I mean, obviously there's going to be quite a good bit of local knowledge there, but this is a popular route for people maybe from a little outside the area. So what is going to be happening over the next month?
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. From the approximately the 27th of March until maybe the 7th or 8th of April, there will be significant works going ahead on the main street of the Moff Village. Now, it's a project that myself and indeed other councillors prior to me coming on the council have been trying to get on a project, and now that we have it, you know, it's going to be a very welcome piece of work. It's a very essential piece, and you know, obviously it's not going to it's going to inconvenience some people. Now, I put the information out there about a month ago on my social media that the idea was for the works to be completed overnight and that there would be road closures. At that point in time, I didn't get any negative responses, but I advised people that there would be a notice in the local papers and that people could have an opportunity to object. Now, I know there have been a number of objections, and I think that the Donegal County Council have to take those on board. And what I would like to see is I would like to see the Donegal County Council engage with the objectors and possibly explore other options, if there are other options. I don't know, but I think that because...
Well, let's tease that out, Terry, because, I think everyone understands that for things to improve, there's going to be some inconvenience. Do you know what I mean? That the old omelette and eggs and all that kind of stuff. That being said, it's a tough pill to swallow for some, and I don't know, I presume thousands of people use this road on a daily basis, to have a 70-kilometre detour, effectively via Bridge End. Are there alternatives, no alternative routes, no...
Well, Greg, that 70km detour pertains to large HGV traffic.
Right, okay.
Smaller traffic can avail of other more local roads. I mean, a car coming from Quigley's Point could go up the Calhame Road across past Iskeheen Chapel and come out at Lennimore and totally avoid...
And pardon my ignorance, Terry, that road is suitable for two-way traffic?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Right, so it's particularly then the HGVs that are going to be inconvenienced. Now, normally what we see is maybe one half of a road being done, a stop-go system allowing traffic on the other side and vice versa. Overnight works also often are employed. Why, as far as you can determine at this stage, Terry, why are those options not on the table?
Well, as far as I'm concerned and my information to date is that on previous occasions that system had been in place and caused huge traffic backlogs, you know, almost as far back as Quigley's Point and from the north way beyond the Cullmore. So I think it's something that has been talked about between the engineers in the Donegal County Council and the contractors. Now, my information is there is a significant amount of cost to do the works at night, but that has been measured against the inconvenience that may cause if the works were to be carried out during the day. But what I would like...
So, Terry, just to be clear, sorry, are we looking at nighttime closures then while the works are ongoing overnight, or is it daytime closures?
The nighttime closure from 7pm until 6am in the morning. That is how it is as we as it stands now. As I said earlier on, there have been a number of objections. I'm not sure how many, maybe possibly no more than half a dozen, but I think that there is an opportunity here for the Donegal County Council have to take the objectors on board, and I think what they need to do is have a conversation about this. It may not change the situation, but at least it gives the council an opportunity to explain the logic in the nighttime closure.
Okay, so I'm sure, Terry, because I don't want to it's a little bit outside the areas I'd be very familiar with. The road, people will still be able to access Derry via this road during the day?
No, not through the main street.
Right, okay.
There is alternative routes that may take HGVs through Carndona, Drumfries, Buncrana, and out then at Bridge End, but for cars, there are other routes, other local routes that are available, and I would hope that the Donegal County Council would mark those clearly so that that ordinary cars can avail of these routes.
Yeah, Dean, I'd agree with that because, you know, what you end up with sometimes is just detour signs. And then there are multiple turns between both detour signs, and I think the locals on these alternative routes, I think as well, they're going to have to put up with a bit of extra traffic. Just put actual names of places on these signs and make it clear for motorists who aren't familiar with the area.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, I emphasise with the people who these works are going to impact on the most, and you know, we have to take their concerns on board, and that's why I'm encouraging the Donegal County Council to engage with these people and at least explore or be given the opportunity to explain the logic behind the closure times and the various different routes that may be available.
But this work needs to be done. I mean, it is much needed work too. That's the rub here, isn't it, Terry? This is not something can be deferred. We need this work done. So it's just a case of minimising disruption as much as actually possible.
The road is in an absolutely terrible state. For many years, we have ongoing issues with subsidence, and it's not going to improve. There has been numerous remedial projects carried out to no avail, and at a significant cost to the taxpayer. These are going to recur and recur until the project is addressed properly and, you know, significant works are carried out to mitigate against what has been causing the problems.
Yep. All right, Terry, good stuff. Listen, thanks for your time this morning. I appreciate it, Councillor Terry Crossan there. Now, there's a few comments actually that slipped under my radar here. We were speaking to Margaret towards Tuesday. It must have been Tuesday. Margaret was on with us and articulated very well and very clearly her displeasure at cash not being available, not being accepted, sorry, at the turnstiles for some games, GEA games. And that this was an inconvenience for, firstly, a lot of people that like to use cash. There are many of you out there, and I know that, and rightly so. And it's good to see the government recognising that and working on plans to make sure that your cash is accepted. But it's not accepted by the GEA for certain games, it seems. Well, we know it's not. I'm not sure if we had a response from the GEA since on that. I'll double check with Caroline. But here's some of your comments in support of Margaret. In response to Margaret Reed GEA, I agree with her. They should take cash, respect their supporters. It is the norm now. No cash, but no thought for older people. Cannot even get on a bus unless it's booked. This has all slipped in with the excuse of COVID. Yes, indeed, the bus is another significant problem. Another Margaret is right. Cash should be taken at the gate, as the county board has said. No one would be turned away with cash. Sure, inside the ground, it's cash. The programme halftime draw and also for the shop. Why? They were charging €4 for a programme in O'Donnell Park when the programme at last Donegal's game in Ballybuffet was €3 with three more pages of written material. Another, I definitely support the cash option for the games, as I know for sure my husband can't go to games unless my son's going, as he doesn't have a phone and has missed a lot of games. That's, for me, the unacceptable part of this. I support paying cash at the gate, says another. Tickets for inter-county games can be bought in Supervalue or Centre stores. That's coming in from Pat. But as I understand, Pat, and you're quite correct, but not everyone is close to them either. So, you know, rather than being able to pay for cash at the gate, you might have a 15-kilometre round trip to your local Supervalue or Centre store. They do great work, don't get me wrong. But again, that's not really a solution, is it? The most definitely should be cash received at the turnstile at the football matches. I'm 46 years of age and still hate booking things online, as do a lot of people, not just the elderly. Paying cash or card should always be an option. Totally agree with Margaret, says a couple more. And last one for now, I totally agree with Margaret. Cash is legal tender. I'm in my 40s. We sort of, obviously, you know, we might highlight the particular inconvenience for a certain group of individuals, but lots of people only want to use cash. They don't trust the cards. They're afraid someone's going to come with one of these portable machines and tap their back pocket and take their money. I'm not saying that happens routinely, but I mean, a lot of people might have those concerns and want to hold on to the cash in their wallet. But the direction of traffic seems to be away from that. We'll keep on that subject and we'll continue to try and get an answer from the county board as to the justification. I think one caller made a good point in that cash is accepted elsewhere within the ground. All right, so where's the logic? Okay, we're joined on the programme now by Maura Ní Mhéireacu, who is the chair of the Irish Self-Catering Federation. Good morning to you, Maura. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Greg. Good morning.
Right. We are talking about new legislation which the government are working on. It's targeting short-term rental properties. I think pre-Christmas, it was particularly in rent pressure zones, but sort of over that holiday period, just before it or shortly afterwards, this the blanket has been thrown wider. This is all self-catering, this is all sort of short-term rentals. We're talking Airbnb properties here, I think, for the most part. Other providers are available, but that's what we're talking about here, Maura, isn't it?
It's actually more than that, Greg. It's self-catering, it's B&B. It's if you've got a boat where people can sleep on, if you've got a glamping, if you've got a yurt, if you've got a cabin, if you've got self-catering on hotel grounds, all of it is covered.
But mostly this is advertised in Airbnb, isn't it?
No, it's all advertising. So in other words, there are three main companies in the Irish market, Airbnb being the best known one, but there's also Expedia and Booking.com. Yep. So if you advertise in any of them, it affects it.
You mentioned bed and breakfast. You mean all regular bed and breakfasts?
If they have more than four rooms. If they have under four rooms, they have to register, but they're not affected in the same way by this legislation, because the self-catering people will have to apply for a planning permission to be designated self-catering. And that comes with quite a lot of complications. The first one is that if you get designated self-catering, you're devaluing your property and you may not get the designation back as to, say, a long-term house again. So in other words, if you've got granny's house that you're renting out for some years in the hope that the kids are going to come home, well, if you get this designation, it may not be possible because it becomes a short-term rental. The cost of it could cost between 3,000 and 5,000 per house to get this designation. And people aren't earning that much money from their self-catering rentals. The planning is the big issue for us. We do want to register because it will quantify the number of properties we have in the country. And I think that's a good starting point. But I think the need for planning permission as well is just, it's just not, I was going to say too complicated. It's completely disorganized where the Department of Housing is concerned.
Yeah, but is that not by design rather than accident? It's clear they want to disrupt this short-term letting market so that more of these properties become available to long-term renters. Like, whether or not that's justified, that's the aim here. They're not going to try and streamline it and make it easy, because that's not really the end game here.
True. But if somebody's needing a house in Dublin, they're not going to be very happy to be told that they've got a house in Gweedore or somewhere else in Donegal. It is not much good to them, because housing crises are in the urban areas, and we do see that there is a need within the urban areas, the rent pressure zones, for a very controlled housing stock available in the self-catering sector. Not closing it down completely, but it does need to be managed and controlled.
Okay.
But in rural and coastal areas, this rule should not apply.
Right. So can we go through an example too, if you don't mind, so it's made very, very clear, right? So let's just say I have a two-bedroom property overlooking the sea, and currently I'm advertising it on, we'll say, Airbnb. I don't want long-term renters in there as such. I don't want, you know what I mean? I just am making quite a few bob out of this because it's a nice long holiday season now and it's a good income for me. I invested in this property. I don't have one, by the way. I invested in this property, right? This is my, you know, this is my pension or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So up until now, pretty much unregulated. Obviously, I've had to pay the tax and all that kind of stuff, insurance and everything. Up until now, I've been making quite a few bob out of this over the summer and the occasional weekend here and there, maybe when the rally's on. So for me to continue to do that, I'm doing it for over 21 nights. So for me to continue to do that...
Over 20.
Yeah, in other words, I'm renting it out loads of the time, right? The whole summer it's booked out. So if that is me, what happens next then? Like, how? What will I have to do to comply with new regulations as they are laid out at the moment?
Okay, so the first thing I'd have to say is if it's 21 nights consecutively, if it's more than 21 nights consecutively, it doesn't bother you. If it's under 21 nights for any booking, it does affect you.
Well, let me just say then, and then we'll continue with the analogy. In the summer, you know, I'm going to be booked out probably 60 nights in a row.
You will, but there'll be different bookings. So therefore,
aha,
you will have to register.
I get you. Right. Okay.
You get me?
Understood. So this is, it could be 61 nights, but it could be 30 couples.
It could be, yes, yeah. No, but somebody might book for 7 nights, the next person books for 3
exactly.
nights.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a made up.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So let's continue then. What will I have to do then to comply with new laws?
Okay. So before I get to that, I have to say that of the people that we have as our membership, 45% of them have used it as family or farm income already. They are using it to support their retirement fund, like 35%. And then some people are using it for college fees and for other reasons, right? So it's not just to make to pay for the house or to make a profit. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the majority of the owners that we have would be women over 45, and they're using it as part of their income because if they've taken time off to have children, they don't have necessarily much of a pension plan. So by this regulation, if it comes in, they will have to register on the registration system with Fáilte Ireland, and then they will have to, within 6 months, get planning. And that is the problem.
Now, also the problem with that, before you go on, listen, at the end of the day, you're not going to get planning in, for example, in rent pressure zones. That's what I was saying right from the beginning. They can say, hold on, we can't give you planning because there's a high rental need. Now, that's right across the country now. So really, how many of the thousands we're talking of are going to get past that first hurdle?
Well, we have been talking to the Department of Housing for over a year. It seems longer, on reasons why people in rent pressure zones should be allowed to continue in business. So if they've been 7 years in business, if it was built as part of a group scheme, if they've diversified as part of farm income, we have about 20 reasons why in the rent pressure zones they should be allowed to continue. And then outside the rent pressure zones, there would be no actual restrictions in the same way.
Mm. Right. So if I happen to get planning permission, what next to comply with the new proposed regulations?
If you get planning permission is the question,
yeah.
Because I discovered in Kerry, now it's a long way from Donegal.
But it's similar, Kerry, I think, really probably in the demographics we're talking of.
Yeah. In Kerry, they have a lot of enforcement orders going out at the moment. And as a result, they're basically closing businesses down, be they on a farm outside town as well as inside town, at the town of Killarney. And we've discovered they're dealing with legislation from 2016. The rent pressure zones came in 2019, but there were no advice or guidelines with them at that stage. So they're dealing with, they're closing businesses down based on out of date guidelines.
Mm. I don't know what problem they're trying to resolve here, because, you know, like, a lot of these properties, if people are, so, they might be sold. I don't know if they're sold or not. But also, too, at the moment, the government's going around taking over a lot of these properties to house refugees, for example. They're also looking for thousands of houses to accommodate people that are currently in hotels. Like, the general public could feel that, and this is not anti-refugee or anything like that, don't get me wrong, but this is the current problem. People could feel that they're being regulated and legislated out of a business to be shoehorned into letting that accommodation go for 800 quid a month.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's a lot less than the hotels are getting paid for this, the same people coming to stay in them. And Donegal and Kerry are in a similar position where a lot of the hotel accommodation has already gone to the refugees. And we have no idea when that's coming back into the market. And if,
well, I can tell you what's going to happen, because very conveniently, these are 3-month contracts and they're being signed out for the summer to be signed back in into the winter.
Mm.
Now, that's great for hotels.
Yeah.
You know, this is going to make a lot of this property worth less as well, I presume.
It is. 20% less. If you've got this STR designation, it's worth 20% less. And there is another little problem in that if you go to sell that property, it has to be sold for cash. You can't get a mortgage on it.
Yeah. Now, we're not looking for anyone to try and to try and circumvent laws or regulations, but, you know, Airbnb, Expedia and others, they're already sending emails out to the people that they work with, notifying them of these changes. So in other words, if you are going to be using these companies, for example, you know, there's no way around this. Now, I'm not trying to find loopholes or ways around it, but people are going to be caught every which way is the point I'm trying to make.
But yes, and the other thing is, it has to be mentioned that we have quite a lot of Irish agents as well. So we would have agents in Donegal, all over the country. So people, you know, if people sign up with them, they can deal with, they take bookings as well. So it's not just the international companies. Mm. There are local companies in Ireland.
No, I understand that. It's kind of the I think the majority. Also, too, I don't know. I'm not affected by this. I'm making my mind up as we go, right? But, you know, this is going to lead to an accommodation shortage as well. You know, there is a capacity in our hotels. There is a capacity perhaps in established bed and breakfasts. You know, if I ran a caf in certain areas, I would need to think, well, a lot of the people coming into my caf staying in local Airbnbs, for an example. You know, there's more than just the economy of that lady you talked of over 45 supplementing her pension because she took time off for school. You know, this talks to the broader tourism economy, I imagine. And if people are looking to come to Ireland and they can't find the kind of accommodation they like, they'll look at Portugal or Spain or France or Germany or wherever.
Yeah, they will. They will. They won't stay at home. They won't stay in Ireland. And like for most of us, the domestic market makes up at least 50% of the customers that we have. And they're very important to the local community as well, to the shops, to the cafes, the activity providers, the visitor attractions. All those earn money from the people who come into the area. And if they're not there, the downstream job losses will be huge.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I think that this would make an awful lot of sense if we were way over supply versus demand, or if these houses might actually end up being long-term rentals, because we do have a housing crisis here. I am not convinced at this point with the various conversations I've had that this is actually going to ease that problem. Finally, what about if you own your own house, right? I've got a house, 5 bedrooms, 4 bedrooms or what have you. The family have fled the nest or whatever it might be. And I rent these rooms out. I think really kind of what the likes of Airbnb was right from the get-go. Yeah. Rent out part of your house. Do I escape these regulations in doing so?
No, you still have to register.
Mm. And apply for planning permission to be a short-term...
No, you don't have have to apply for planning permission in the same way.
Okay. There's a slight difference there.
Yeah.
The problem is you're going to struggle finally, Maura, in making this argument, because the argument will continuously be put to you that we're in a housing crisis and we need to house people. And these are people who have got loads of money and are creaming it as is. You know what I mean? The argument against what you're probably looking for is going to be pretty strong. So do you think this can be resisted?
Well, we had a lot of support from rural TDs and senators in the Dáil. They have a serious understanding of what the situation is. We had a meeting in Killarney on Monday night, and it was the councillors who came up with the solution to what the problem was in Kerry. So I think we have we're working hard to change this legislation before it becomes law.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything you want to add finally, Maura?
If anybody wants to join the Irish Self-Catering Federation, they can contact us at isef.ie or phone 086-178-5654.
Thanks for your time this morning. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks very much,
bye-bye.
Greg.
That's Maura Ni-Varicu there. So if you're going to rent out your accommodation on the likes of Expedia, Booking.com, you are going to have to register with Fulcher Ireland, and the companies are working with the governments on this, by the way. And you know that's how you're going to reach your customers. There's no point putting in the local paper, because you know people down the country or across the water are not going to see it. And by registering them with Fulcher Ireland, they have that database, and then you have to apply for planning permission. In certain areas, there's no chance you're going to get it, because it's not going to be about the structure of your building. It's going to be to do with things like housing needs in the area, and there's a great housing need. But maybe many of you out there think that, you know what, this is what needs to be done here. We need these houses for long-term renters. But what's your views out there? You've heard that conversation. Good morning, Fionnuala.
Good morning. My complaint is that I cannot get a booking for to renew my driving licence. I have phoned 0818-919-090, and then you get so many options, and then you press A, B, or 1, 2, or 3, and then you are asked if you want a renewal of your driver's license booking. You ring 0818-700-800, and then they give you all the options again, and then they tell you that if you want to drive to renew your driver's license, you ring the previous number again, and that just goes around in a circle, so that I cannot book my driving license renewal for on the phone.
Then they obviously are trying to encourage you to go online, but you either can't or don't want to do it online. You want to ring up and do it over the phone. And they're sending you into this matrix, this circle.
I actually can't do it online because I haven't got a computer.
And
I'm too old to learn all these new tricks.
Yeah, well, why should you have to anyway? Regardless of your age,
Fionnuala. That's what I'm saying.
So they're sending you, one number sends you to another number, and that number sends you back to the original number. You've been trying this for over a week. We're going to try these numbers and see what we can come up with. But at this stage now, you must be pulling your hair out, Fionnuala.
Yes. Yes, because my driver's license is going to expire and I'll be driving without a license. And the same thing, if I wanted to go on the bus, the same thing applies. Mm. I can't book a bus on the phone. I have to do it online.
There's a serious issue there as well, because...
Basically trapped in the house.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that's an exaggeration either, because you don't have access to online facilities. You could effectively be off the road without a licence, and as you say, you need the computer to book a bus ticket, and you don't want to have to rely on other people around you to do that for you. You're an independent person.
Yes.
Okay. Right, we're continuing.
I'll leave that with you.
Yeah, please do, Fionnuala.
Yeah, okay.
All right, thank you. We'll be in touch with you if we get any success in relation to that. So maybe you've had this experience that Fionnuala has had. I think I mentioned this in passing yesterday, but it's good to get a voice to the situation. She's trying to book an appointment for her license renewal. She's been trying for over a week. She had one number, she rings that. After a series of press one for this, press two for that, press three for the other, they give her another number, she rings that number. She goes, press one for this, press two for that, press three for the other. And then they give her a number. It's the first number again. So she rings that. Well, you could be there forever, couldn't you? You're stuck in the loop at that point. It's like time travel or something. She doesn't have the facilities to go online. She doesn't have a computer, doesn't use a smartphone, just wants to ring up and book a license renewal. And again, another mention of this really important issue, and I think it's really important issue, of not being able to avail of free travel in some cases because you have to book online and it's difficult for some. Okay, any insight into that for Finola? 086 60 25,000. Maybe there's a good person listening in an office that deals with license renewals or appointments that could ring us up, and we could try and, without compromising anyone's GDPR, put everyone in contact to get the story, to get that situation sorted. The Muff Detour will work. The Muff Detour will work fine if all HGV vehicles are kept off the smaller roads, but this won't happen. It'll just take one for a gridlock. Thanks. That would be my concern, and I think that's why strong signage is required there, isn't it? Another caller says, we live in the centre of Muff Village and have two businesses on the main street. We will be more inconvenienced by the roadworks than anyone objecting. However, we are delighted this work is being done. The street and footpaths need done and are long overdue. 1 week of convenience for our business is worth it to get the work done. Indeed, and I hope that was the tone of the conversation with Terry, that we recognise that this work has to be done. And I think really he's just hoping that the council do everything they can to limit inconvenience as much as possible. But hey, there's people directly affected by it, but they can see the long game in it. Re-cash in the GAA. Cash can be taken in the ground at venues around the county, as it is the clubs that run the shops and draws, etc. Whereas the Donegal County Board, Ulster GEA, have responsibility for gate revenue. And that might be the case. But listen, we're just sports fans. We just want to go and see a game. We don't really consider the ins and outs of, you know, it's the GAA. And people want to be able to roll up with their 20-euro note, pay to get in, put their change in their pocket, and away they go. Let's see. There is a meeting in Letchamack Award Hall on Sunday, the 4th of March, in relation to the closure since before Christmas of the Letchamack Award Doctor's Surgery. All TDs and councillors are welcome. The meeting is starting at 8 p.m. I presume, and I hope the organisers send an email to the TDs and councillors to formally invite them. It's the best way to ensure that they do acknowledge it. Greg, stop taking so many refugees in when there's no room. Irish people fed up with it. Well, we're not taking any more into Donegal at the moment. And in terms of Ukrainian refugees coming here, it's down to a trickle, and the number of international protection refugees has fallen drastically. So I understand the point you're making, but that problem is seemingly starting to resolve itself. Greg, what happens if you own a house in Donegal and work in the north and come home every weekend or so? It's your home, but you choose to rent it out when you're not there yourself. Again, I don't think you're going to get around. I don't think you're going to get around it. The rules might apply differently, but I don't see how you could declare you're not there 5 days a week all year round. It sounds complicated to me, right?